this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 coming to you from Codemass.
Yes.
2016. How do you people That's live right. in such frigid coldness?
You know, Seth, we just grew up with it. It's so funny because when I lived in Redmond, I knew how to drive in snow. So on the rare times we would get snow, having grown up in Michigan, I could just be like, you know, the city shuts down, you know, a couple inches of snow. But nobody, if you don't know how to drive in it, it's not safe. So.
Well, there you go. This is the fabulous Jennifer Marsden. Very smart. We actually love the same kinds of things.
We do. Yeah. We've known each other for such a long time because Seth and I were always giving the machine learning talks at all the same conferences.
It's the stuff.
It is.
So you're wearing a really fun hat. Tell me about it.
I am. So what I'm wearing is something made by a company called Emotive, and it is called the Epic Plus headset. And so what this is doing is reading my EEG. It's reading my brain waves. So that's just kind of a non-invasive way to grab the differential and voltage in your brain waves. And so what I can do with that is some pretty, pretty fun stuff. If you combine that with machine learning, you can do some really neat stuff.
So what is it exactly? It's just reading electrical changes in your brain, or what is it?
It is. It's just a differential in voltage, essentially.
So what does that output look like? Is it just a bunch of numbers?
It's a bunch of numbers. It's all just numeric data, and most of the data is in about roughly the 4,000s.
Okay.
And I believe the units is something that's proprietary to the Emotive.
Okay, and how many data points are you getting? Is it one per sensor?
So what I'm doing, this one per sensor, I have 14 different sensors on my scalp right now. So it's reading 14 channels of data, and the sample rate is 128 readings per second. So it's generating data at a rate of 128 across all 14 channels per second.
That's interesting. And so it's not mind reading. That's what you're telling me right here. That's not as exciting, though.
You know what? But then we can still do some really cool things with it. So one thing we can do is I have the ability to create mappings between your brain waves, what you're thinking in your mind, and some action in the physical world. Yeah. So you could do things like people have done fun things like fly a drone, right? You think up, lift, and a drone, you know, could lift if it, and that's not machine learning, right? You and I know that. It's just pattern matching. It's just simple pattern matching. So recording and saying, for this particular pattern of EEG, do this particular action. And you can do that not only with things in the physical world, like, you know, a drone, but also things in the virtual world. Would you like to see?
Yes.
All right, cool. So what I have right here is a piece of software that came with the Emotive. And you can see I actually have one sensor right here, my back one that's
busted.
It's not quite running at full capacity right now. There's a nice sensor ability. So there's actually numerical data is captured on this as well, how well the contact quality is running. Mm-hmm. And so most of the sensors are running well. I do actually have one in the back that's been a little finicky this morning, so I'm going to have to go mess with that before my talk. But I think I can still get this to work.
Okay.
So right now what I'm going to do is switch over to the cognitive suite. And actually maybe I'll be a new user and retrain this.
Okay.
So let me add a new user. Let's call me Seth and hit OK. And so what I'm going to do to train this is just train this action on my brain. So I'm going to start by doing a neutral brain recording where I just record what my brain looks like at rest, just so it has a baseline, right? So I'm going to do this. It's going to take 8 seconds. There's going to be an awkward silence, but we're all going to be okay with it for 8 seconds, all right? And I'm just going to try to relax and just think about nothing in particular for about 8 seconds.
Okay?
We're going to go to our happy place. Go all zen. Here we go. Train and go. All right, so it has completed 8 seconds, so we're going to accept that training. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take some virtual action. Like we have a little cube hovering there in midair. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm going to think about, there's a number of different things you could think about. I'm going to choose to think pull.
Okay.
So now we're going to do another 8 second iteration, and I'm going to visualize pull, and be all Jean Grey and visualize pulling that box toward me with my mind.
Okay.
So I'm going to do that, and now we're going to train for another 8 seconds. And here we go. Don't make me laugh. Let's focus. 1, 2, 3, go. All right. So now the model is going to be live.
Right.
It is trained on the baseline. It's using the baseline plus what my mind was thinking as I was thinking.
I see.
Now, so it knows that action. So I'm going to accept the training. It updates my profile, and now the cube is live. So,
that's crazy.
I just visualized and was able to move the cube. Let's do it again.
Nice.
Isn't that amazing?
Hold on, but let me. I got to ask you a couple of questions.
Of course.
So the first one is, like, when we think those things, are the same electrical patterns happening? Like, exactly the same? Are they that, similar?
That What's is a the, great, great question. 10 points to Gryffindor. So, what is actually happening is, so brains are unique. Different brain patterns may look very different. So, even if we were thinking the exact same thing, the way your brain thinks about it may be very different than the way my brain thinks about it.
Maybe not. We like the same things.
Maybe. That is true. But the signals could look very similar. The other thing is, there's actually, in the research I've been doing, I've taken multiple readings on a single person at different times, and the waves actually look quite different then as well.
Yeah.
So if I like recorded your brain waves like first thing in the morning when you haven't had your coffee yet, and then again maybe in the afternoon, or again, if someone's had something to drink, or they're tired, or there's a whole lot of factors, your mental state, you're upset about something, all those kinds of things do affect what they look like.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So what I'm working on now, so this is aside from this, is being able to do a generic way of, let me actually tell you what the project is that I'm trying to do with this. So this is all very cool, mapping, intent to action. So that's one thing we can do. But the thing that we can do that's even cooler, because while this was very, very cool, and oh my gosh, because how you have not lived until you've moved something with your mind.
Yeah.
But what's even cooler is to be able to actually use machine learning, not just pattern recognition, which was very simple what we were doing there, but taking historical data and then being able to use that to make future predictions, as we do in supervised machine learning. So, my project, what I've actually done with this, is I took this headset and I put it on my husband, and I asked him a series of questions, and I recorded his EEG while he was telling me the truth, and then I recorded him while he was lying to me.
So there's the baseline.
There's the baseline. Yeah. So I got what your EEG looks like when you're telling the truth, what it looks like when he's lying, and then I have a labeled data set of here's truth-based EEG data and lie-based EEG data. Mm-hmm. And then I I used Azure Machine Learning.
Of course.
And built a classifier to perform lie detection.
So is he wearing this all the time?
Unfortunately, I haven't been able to make that work.
I got you a special a hat.
Yeah, it's great. But it's a really cool thing. And so one of the things I'm trying to do now, so I did some early initial prototypes, and I can show you some of those if you want. There's one here that's not even, so this isn't even, so this one is not doing the actual lie detection. So let me be really clear here. This is not doing time series proper processing. What this one is actually doing is just, can I differentiate between this, I put the headset on him and I asked him a series of questions, and these questions were all very simple yes or no questions, and they were all very clear cut. There was nothing that could potentially be ambiguous.
Sure.
It was all very definite yes or no, and recorded all of that. I also put markers in the data. When you run this data, I can crack this open for you for a second too. It's kind of cool to see. This is a piece of software that came with the headset. It's called the Emotive Test Bench. Minimize everything in the background so it'll look better. This is Emotive's test bench.
Okay.
And what we can do here is it actually is reading. Each one of these different colored lines represents one of the 14 channels of data that's coming through. And so what I did was actually create some markers. So if I take, let me open some of my saved markers here. Start from here.
Yeah.
Right, so this is Emotive's test bench software. Okay. This is a piece of proprietary software that came with this headset made by the company Emotive. And so what you're seeing right here are the 16 different channels of, or I'm sorry, the 14 different channels of data that it is reading from my head.
Right.
And you can actually deselect some of them, like if I don't want to read certain channels, I can turn them off.
Right.
And those all correspond to the head. And so what I actually did was send markers. So I would actually record and be able to then process out a chunk of time series data.
Got it.
So for example, right before I started asking the question, I could send a marker, and it actually, you can see it come through right here. when that comes, you see the little one come through, and then I'd ask a question, he would respond, and I would hit a two. So that way I'm able to process that. Right, and that actually shows up in an Excel. It's stored in a proprietary format, but then there's the ability to convert it to CSV, so then I can open it in Excel and actually extract all the, and upload it right into Azure Blob Storage. Yep, so it's been really, really kind of amazing stuff. And kind of, I did some kind of initial things just to see, because when I started, I did not know if this was going to work or not. So I was doing some initial prototypes, and this is one of the very, very early prototypes that I did. So this is not doing time series processing. This is not doing actual lie detection. Let me be really clear about what I'm showing you here. But what it's doing is essentially, I asked all of the truth data, and then right after that, I asked all of the lie data. So we have these two sessions, but kind of similar mental state, because it was all done at the same time. And so I just wanted to see, could we differentiate between truth and lie? Mm-hmm. So I asked him the questions, he gave him truth, lie, I had a labeled data set, and I fed this into Azure Machine Learning. And I started by trying a logistic regression in a decision jungle, just to see linear, nonlinear, how it would play out. And so if you look at the results here, just from a very, very early prototypical type test, you can see,
oh wow,
that with the decision jungle, we actually got very,
Really good.
Very strong results. If we look down at the numbers here, Azure Machine Learning provides a lot of great numbers to help make it really, really easy for me to do this. But obviously, you want your true positives and your true negatives to be very high. You want your false negatives and your false positives to be low, which they are. And you can see here we have an accuracy of roughly 93%.
That's really good.
Yes, it is. And the total area under the curve is about 98% when you factor in things like recall and precision and such. So when I saw this, I was like, there's definitely something to this. There is some signal we could extract here. EEG
if it was any higher, I would be like, wow, what? There's some overfitting
going
on.
Oh my gosh, do you want to know something funny?
What, tell me.
All right, so when the very first time I ran this, I just was so excited that I threw all the data at it. And one of the things that it provides to me is time. Mm-hmm. So there's a time reading, there's a time counter. Right, let me crack open the Excel and actually show you the data too. But one of the factors is time, so it's keeping track of the time. So with each row, we have time. And so I fed all of it into the machine learning algorithm for something. Okay, cool. And I got 100% accuracy. And I'm like, no, something's wrong. EEG is such noisy there. There's no way that could have happened. And in machine learning, that's very common. When you see 100% accuracy, usually something's wrong there. So what I did was look at it, and I was thinking about what data did I put in, and I realized time. There was a timestamp in there, and remember that I asked all of the truth questions and then all of the lie questions.
So it's just an easy set.
Yeah, it's like
one dot.
Yeah, exactly.
If the time is less than 20,
than this, it's truth. If the time is less than that, it's lie. So I was like, okay.
Oh, computer.
Silly Jen. So anyway, I threw out some of the time data and like just put in just EEG in this particular model that I'm running here, and now we can see that, okay, using just the raw EEG signals, this is what we get.
It's interesting that recall and precision are very similar. Usually they're a little like
off a bit.
That's interesting.
Off a bit, yeah. But yeah, no, it is. It's pretty cool. Let me show you some of the data, too.
That would be cool.
Let me pull up one of my, let me just see who I've looked at closely. All right, here's one of the ones on my husband. Let's pull that one out.
It's just going to be like 14 columns of numbers ranging between 4,000 and some other number?
It sure is. That's absolutely right. So this is all data that is provided by the emotive headset. So some of this, a lot of this I'm actually throwing out. But there's a counter. And remember I mentioned that the sample rate was 128. So this just basically iterates to 128 and then resets. So that one's, I just throw that out. That's not very exciting. You can throw that out too. These are the actual 14 channels of data that we get. And so you can see a lot of numbers in the 4,000s. You can see just by looking at this with the naked eye, there's no way you could discern any patterns in this data. It's very kind of difficult to process in this form, but that's where machine learning really is powerful and can help us see things you can't see. So this gives you the those 14 channels, and I actually have a diagram I can throw up as well.
Let's do it.
It shows where these map to the different centers in the brain. Let me just show that to you real quick just so we can see it. Here we go. So for the sensor positions, here's a quick look, and so you can see exactly where those things map on the brain. So the ones that are right above my ears here are the T7, T8, O1 and O2 are in the back, the AF3 and AF4 are the ones near the front. So there's a nice mapping of how those things relate to the different places on your head.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
My concern would be this, and you tell me in your experience what you've seen.
Yes.
Like, you've already said that your mental state will determine like the amount of electricity.
Yes.
How do we make a model that works over a varied amount of time? I mean, what would be
great
your suggestion?
Great question. Okay, so let me get to that. Let me get to that because that is exactly the question that I am trying to solve right now. And there's a number of different algorithms I have in mind to fix that. So let me actually run through all my ideas and then you can give me feedback, Seth, and tell me what you think. All right, so some other things. There's actually a gyroscope in here as well. Now, in my initial stuff, I was actually throwing that data out. That might actually be relevant, though.
Yeah.
When you think about like World Series
your
and poker.
Your tick,
your little, if you tilt your head maybe to one side or the other, maybe that means you're lying or something. Yeah. So there could actually be some signal there. So I have to go back and play with that some more. But marker, so that's where, remember when we did the marker goes one? So that's where it will show up. You'll see a one or a two or whatever you've manually sent right here. So I can use that to extract the relevant parts out of this data.
The other question is, are you doing any binning? Like binning certain time series?
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely.
Yep. Let's get to all of that. We can skip. Should we just skip to that?
No, let's do it.
We don't care. Okay. So there's a timestamp. They have it separately in seconds and milliseconds. Uh-huh. So I just do some math at the end and say seconds times 1,000 plus milliseconds to get into one number. This is the context quality. So remember how we were seeing those green versus the one of them was like red or black or it was lower contact quality? So there's actually a number that represents that. So here at the beginning, you can see they're all zero. So zero is when it's actually black. And then there's a progression of red, orange, yellow, green in terms of the contact quality that these have with my head. When I put this sensor on my head, it uses moisture. So there's actually a felt pad, and I use a contact solution, saline solution, the same thing you use for your contact lenses, and fitted each one of these on. And so sometimes when there's not enough contact solution, it's not giving a good connection, you see that. But you can see when I just put it on, and then once we had it running for just a second and I got it situated,
that could also be discriminative, because maybe you're generating a certain amount of heat in a part, and that might say, oh, you're lying, because every time like your husband says he did the laundry, you didn't, it's heating up right here, which is taking the moisture off, which might be changing this particular value too.
Who knows?
Yeah, well, that's what
I never thought of that. That could be. So all of this was provided up through this column is provided by Emotive. These things I added manually at the end.
Sure.
So I annotate whether it's truth or lie and just have a column to mark that. This is my calculation for the time to just put it in one column. And then I have a user ID, and then I can calculate the question ID too when I'm time seriesing it to bubble that up to one question. All right, so let's talk about all of the fun things that we can actually do with this data. Yeah. Oh, one other thing. Can I just talk to you about this real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So when I was looking at doing this, I had to think, you know, there's got to be other people who have looked at this, right? Because there are a lot of people who have kind of complained about typical methods of lie detection for a long time.
Sure.
You see all the things, you know, in CSI, typical polygraphs, you know, some people question their accuracy. And the reasons for that are things like they really measure your emotional level more than whether or not you have knowledge of a crime, right? So people have been able to beat them using things like stepping on a tack. So you keep your, you know, the pain or whatever sends your emotional state high, just like the stress of lying does. And so it's hard to differentiate between the two.
Pro tip, lie detector test, step on a thumbtack or something.
True.
She just gave
true
us
thing.
A
yeah, nice. True thing. So I mean, you've probably seen all the same crime dramas that I have. Mm-hmm. But in that way, you can actually do some cool things. And so I looked and did some research. Has anyone else looked at maybe using EEG? And I did find a little bit of research that some government agencies have been looking about using EEG. Right. But the way they did it is a little different than mine.
Right.
Instead of asking questions, what they do is actually use a visual representation. So imagine you're a suspect in a crime, you put an EEG reader on you, and then flash images in front of the person. And there's something called the P300 ERP. That stands for event-related potential. And that's something that we use very commonly because EEG is very noisy data. There's a way of processing it, they call it ERP, which is actually a little easier to work with sometimes that can help grab some of the signals or the peaks a little better. So, but this P300 ERP is it essentially measures recognition. So imagine you're walking through CodeMash and you see a face that you recognize. You get that little flash of recognition of, oh, I know that person from somewhere. And it's an instinctive response, right? You can't control that or repress it. And so That's essentially the P300 ERP. So imagine you just committed a crime or whatever, and I flash some pictures in front of you, and some of them may be normal, but maybe there's a picture of the crime scene or the murder weapon or something that only the perpetrator of the crime would recognize. And in those scenarios, when they see there's that flash, they can differentiate, okay, this person
That's
at least
clever.
Recognizes. Yeah,
That's really
yeah.
Clever.
So it's more of a visual thing. It's not asking yes or no questions like I was doing, but it's very interesting. And the reason they call it the P300 is because that response is activated roughly 300 milliseconds after the stimuli. Anyway, really between like 250 to 500 milliseconds.
But the spike is very pronounced. It has to
be. It really is. And there's some diagrams we can throw up if you'd like to see them. But it really is. This is the P300 response right here, where it's a very noticeable dip in that response. So very, very kind of cool thing. And so this was very interesting to me, just to know that, okay, there's something to this. And then it also helped me with the time thinking. Like, I had no idea of, you know, what time after something, you know, does the brain respond? Like, how fast are we talking? Are we talking like 8 milliseconds? Are we talking hundreds of milliseconds?
Because you gotta know which
reading
to take.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I'm using the markers to really get the readings, but just having this kind of research was also kind of like,
helps,
let me make sure I'm kind of thinking about this. And that the sampling rate was sufficient, right? Because I was taking 128 readings per second, which calculates out to roughly one reading every 8-ish milliseconds. And so was every 8 milliseconds enough was another concern I had. But it turns out, like from this research, I'm pretty confident that it is.
Yeah.
All right, so now let's talk about some of the things that I've done. Let's talk about algorithms for a while,
okay,
I guess.
Cool.
That's
that's
the fun stuff that everybody wants to see. So and my initial things, we kind of start with the simplest because that's what you do. And so we did some time series of, okay, let's just take, you know, where they're answering the question and look at things like, look at those waveforms and look at like the maximum value, the minimum value, average value,
sure.
You know, standard deviation, variance, you know, those kind of things. And just look at some of those stats and see, you know, is there anything there to that? So that's a very simple thing. And you can get some amount of decent accuracy. It's not great, but decent accuracy, you know, just using that. And now what I'm working on, because I can actually get very, very good accuracy, as you can see in the 90s and in high 90s actually, when you're working with a person in this within a single session. But what I'm trying to do, what I'd like to do with this is generalize it so that we'll work on any person, maybe given a baseline. Because you saw how when I did the demo where I was pulling the cube toward me, it needed a baseline to be able to do it effectively.
Right.
So we could do things like maybe using that differential to normalize the data between like our things. Because maybe when I think something, it spikes to, you know, 8, and maybe when you think it spikes to 12 or something like that. So being able to kind of normalize across people might be interesting. And then there's other ways of processing time series data. One way is like unrolling the waveform, where essentially I have all this data, so why don't I make, instead of doing, you know, maybe these 14 channels here, another 14 channel, another 14 channel of EEG data, you can potentially unroll the waveform is one way you can process it, where I kind of take that second reading, put it right here, the third reading, put it right here.
Oh, I see.
You can do that sort of thing, and then you have just a whole bunch of features for the entire thing, and as long as the stimuli kind of lines up right here, then you can sometimes do something interesting with that. But you just have to make sure you align things very well.
Or you could even like extract the actual wave using some kind of Fourier transformation
to
get to separate out the sine waves.
Yes.
And maybe there's a certain part of that transformation where there's just noise. You can get the actual wave that's even better.
Right. Exactly. So I'm looking at that too. Like one of the things I've thought about is like hidden Markov models.
Sure.
Thinking about like a mini state machine, because the process it goes through is I ask you a question, your mind has to process the question, think of the response, or actually decide whether or not you're going to tell the truth or not first, and then think of your appropriate response, either telling the truth or lying, then actually do the things that you need to do to actually speak. So there's like processing, there's a lot of different processing, right? So if we can zero in even more narrowly on here's the part of the state that I'm in where I'm doing the actual, you know, decision to lie maybe, or, you know, one of the things that actually got me interested in doing this in the first place was the fact that, you know, the stuff on brain science I've read is kind of insinuates that when you are telling the truth, that activates the recall centers in your brain. And when you're lying, that activates the creative centers in your brain. And so it seems like you should be able to differentiate, you know, based on things like that. So very cool. And then you mentioned Fourier transforms. Yay! So another common technique is something called wavelets, where you can divide a continuous time signal into essentially frequency bands based on some well-known frequencies, gamma and all that stuff. And there's great EEG libraries. I found a Python EEG library out there that was useful.
Python's the stuff, man.
Yay. So there's that. And then also processing the ERP, using the ERP stuff, as opposed to just all the raw EEG that I have here. So that can be very useful. When you look at Kaggle, so in case people aren't familiar with Kaggle, awesome site. Go to Kaggle.com. It's Kaggle, K-A-G-G-L-E. Kaggle.com. Yes, it's an amazing site, but it is the kind of the home of data science, they call it. But they have these amazing competitions where they have a very well-defined problem that either a company is trying to solve or it's just kind of a fun thing to learn more. And then you get that well-defined problem and you get a data set with which to solve it. And so you can take that data and actually, you know, try to perform really cool, you know, machine learning algorithms and figure out a good answer, and then submit your stuff. And so one of the recent things was an EEG challenge, and the winners, actually, I didn't know about it until after it happened, unfortunately, but the winners kind of wrote up a blog post, as they typically do, on, you know, what they did and how their algorithm worked and things like that. And they found, I believe it was that the low frequency band domain was actually very, very telling in differentiating between EEG. And it was kind of a cool problem. The actual problem that they were solving using EEG was imagine having a prosthetic arm and wanting to differentiate between like grasping and lifting something. Yeah. And it's a prosthetic, so if you can differentiate like with your mind, like it's a prosthetic, so using things to say, all right, I want it to be able to do this now, and now I want to pick it up. Even to be able to differentiate between those two things could make it a lot easier to work with an arm and control a prosthetic arm with your mind like you used to with a real arm. So really, really cool challenge. And so the blog post they wrote up on, you know, how they solved it was very cool and useful as well.
Well, that is so fun. Now I like want two of those things.
I know, right? Aren't they the best? They're so much fun. Like, I'll put it on you later.
Here's the thing. Like for us that do machine learning, like we work with the algorithms, and on that side, there's like a dearth of like really fun. Well, there is. You can use the Titanic data set or the Iris data set or the Titanic. Yeah. But when you actually get real data, like for example, yesterday we made a robot follow it. We trained it on a straight line, and after it learned, it could follow curved lines. It could follow really round curves. And seeing like real live things like that is always super cool.
It really is. And what I love is just the ability to make a real difference with this. When you think about some of the brain science and things, like imagine the case in American football where, you know, there's a really hard tackle and the guy goes off to the sidelines, but he's like, put me back in, coach. And he keeps playing, and then the next day he tragically, you know, dies. Like that's a horrible, horrible scenario. Like if we had something like this to be able to detect there's, you know, anomalies in your brain patterns, like that would be amazing. There's scenarios that they're doing with the emotive right now of a paraplegic wearing it. So imagine being paralyzed from the neck down and being able to use your mind to control a wheelchair and move it forward and backwards based on either facial expressions or patterns of thinking.
Right.
So there's just, I love the ability to actually use machine learning in a lot of these medical scenarios for autism research. There's so many cool things to really make a tangible difference and make people's lives better.
Well, this is so cool. We need to nerd out again.
I know, right, Seth?
Talk nerdy to me. This is awesome. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We have a couple of talks. We're pretty excited. Hopefully I can step into one. That would be fun.
It would be fun.
Again, we're here at the Kalahari Codematch 2016 in the frozen tundras of Northern Ohio. Thanks so much for watching. This is Channel 9. My name is Seth Juarez, and we'll see you next time. Take care.